This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We're talking about the case of Jesse Butler, which if you're happening to be searching this in 2030 and you found him on Tinder and he looks like a possible date and you're like, he looks really familiar. Run for your fucking life. Here's the story. Since the courts said we're not going to lock you away for 78 years, we'll make your name known for 78 years or however, basically into infamy. You're never going to live this shit down. Let's talk about the fact that obviously they said, okay, 1 year, some therapy, don't screw up because then you might go back to jail or prison, but you know, hope they'll probably just have him locked in mom's basement with bubble wrap for a year is my guess. But let's talk about recidivism in this, in something like this. The stats are what they are because a lot of sexual assaults don't get reported. But in reality here, what are we talking? The likelihood that this person or someone like this person, in your opinion, in your expertise, what are the odds?
Very high.
That this guy repeats the pattern.
Yeah, very high. Because this is the sexual mapping in his brain. This is what arouses him. And those kinds of things can become addictive and compulsive. And this was not a one-time thing for him. There was a whole series of victims. And so I would think that sometimes with advanced age, you know, I mean, let's say he was locked up for 30 or 40 years, he might get out as an old man and the odds would go down, less testosterone flowing in there. But somebody, I mean, none of us would want him dating our daughter, right? It doesn't matter how much therapy he had. You're not going to want to live next door to him or have him around anybody that you care about.
And that's an interesting thing to think about. Actually, I brought this up with Robin Drake the other day, too. When the DA is making this decision, when the judge is saying, yeah, I'll sign off on the youthful offender bullshit in Oklahoma, because again, it's still water. They have magical water that magically wipes away rapists and they just become wonderful human beings afterwards. When you have that going on and you have this idea of rehabilitation, do you think they'd be making the same choices if it were their own daughters that were violated by this blob? Would they be going, oh yeah, rehabilitation, 1 year? And if not, what kind of cognitive dissonance is going on here that they're able to, well, it's someone else's daughters. Mm-hmm. It's someone else's 16-year-olds out there that are having to deal with this. I mean, that's some funky mental gymnastics going on.
Good term, mental gymnastics. It sure is not logical. It doesn't make any sense. It lacks, you know, there's a lack of compassion and empathy and insight for understanding. And it would be a wonderful question for them if after a year of his counseling and minimal supervision, if he showed up at your front door asking your daughter out, would you smile and shake his hand and say, go out and have a nice time?
Yeah. We're talking earlier, you know, stupid, sadistic fellow predator. What it's usually one of the three here. And identification with the offender, because what we hear so often from folks who are giving these people the pass is, oh, they got their whole life ahead of them. We all make mistakes when we're young. It makes me really wonder about what kind of mistakes some people made when they were younger that they got away with, when they're letting shit like this just kind of go on down the road. How often is it where there's just this silent, deep down identification that's going on with people because it's either someone that they were or maybe still are, or someone that on the opposite scale of this was victimized by somebody like this. Okay. How often is that at play where maybe they were victimized, but in some way, shape, or form, there's an identification with the predator? It's almost, in some weird sort of way, Stockholm-ish, where oh, you know, but they deserve a second. Like, now the person who did this to me, look, they have kids, they have a life, and things are good out there, at least in their minds from 10,000 feet away. How often is that at play when adults who should know better are making horrible decisions to let people like this out?
It's a really good question. I think one of the things where we've gone wrong as a society is misplaced empathy. And violent perpetrators with these kind of personality disorders, there's this myth that they're this way because they were all abused. And we've all heard that sentence, hurt people hurt people. And a lot of people buy into that. And I push back on it because that's really not what current neuroscience says. Many of these folks came from wonderful families. You know, maybe they had enabling, they had parents that fed their narcissism, and they never got punished for anything. But this idea that we are supposed to have empathy for perpetrators, I think even victims can buy into that, and it's very misguided. I'll plug a book that just came out on 1031. It's not my book, so I don't make any money from it, but Cruelty by Nature by Dr. Peter Salerno. And the reason we have a lot of literature in, you know, very clinical kinds of books and stuff that's very dense and hard to get through. But he wrote a really user-friendly book published on Halloween, available through Amazon. And it's a quick read. It's to the point. And he really goes into this myth that we have to have compassion for all these violent perpetrators because they've all been wounded and abused in the past. It's not true. And he explains it very succinctly and very, very clearly. And I'm going to be recommending this to everybody when I hear them say, oh, but we have to have compassion for these people. We don't.
We don't.
We need to look at this realistically. And it's the Cruelty by Nature, the Science of Intentional Abuse. And that's the premise, is that these people know what they're doing. They may weaponize a story that, oh, I had it so hard as a kid, because it's a manipulation tactic.
Yeah.
And so we need to educate people better about misplaced empathy, and perpetrators need consequences.
Yeah. I mean, is that the one you recommended to me the other day too? I think you sent it to me.
It probably is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I was
recommending it to everybody. Yeah. And I love it because you can get through it in about 2 hours, and it's not like being weighed down with, you know, with too much psychobabble. It's a good one.
Dive into that one. That looks like very fascinating. And that's the thing with so many of these. And is it, do we have such a difficulty with it because, you know, a good chunk of our population is not psychopathic, is not necessarily close, because we're always trying to run things through our own prism of we've all done bad things in our life. Not like this shit, most of us, but we've all done some bad, and we all, you know, feel shame for some of the things in our lives that we've done. And then is it just human to then equate everyone's bad things onto our own bad things? Like, well, I've done bad things too, but you know, you may, like me, normal, healthy, maybe people may be on the scale of bad thing here and their shit's way out over here.
Yeah.
But because we're trying to empathize, and we don't, is it because we can't see, we can't quite understand the level of depravity and darkness that some people are capable of, because it just doesn't register, because we just don't viscerally feel it or see it or understand it.
Yeah, we don't understand it. People who have normal empathy can't fathom the true nature. I'll just call it evil. They can't fathom the nature of evil. And it's much more comforting to believe that folks who do these awful kinds of things, they're just damaged. They're just wounded. And then that also gives us the illusion of control that we can heal them.
Yeah.
And oh my gosh, is that a mistake? Don't marry someone like this thinking that your love is going to heal and change them. And that's another thing that, you know, we read a lot about is people who end up, they're not psychopathic, they're not narcissistic, but they end up married to someone who is, because they thought they could help them.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of traps with this stuff. And I think that's one of the things that I'm pretty passionate about. I know you are too, is let's get the accurate information out there so people can protect themselves, because there are a lot of predators.
I mean, if, and it'd be a very interesting shift in society if we ever get there. where we could just discard these people the way they deserve to be discarded, where it's just gone. But internally, we don't want to do that. That makes us feel like we're bad people. That makes us like, oh no. I mean, it's a lot, you know, it's kind of like individuals who have maybe a narcissist in their family, a real volatile one. And people are like, why are you having a relationship there? And oftentimes, well, it can be because they don't know any better, or it could be because they're doing it for themselves, for what is going to be psychologically right and best for them, where others can just easily say, off with you, you're not going to traumatize me anymore. Mm-hmm. A world where we can more easily say, and it's safer to say, off with you, you can't traumatize me anymore. Why do you think it's so difficult for us to get there, where discarding vile human beings, people who are not ever going to have anyone's best interest at heart other than themselves, why is it so hard for us to see that and to act out that way?
I think it gets into hope and this idea that everybody can be fixed. I mean, I hear all the time, they just need to go to therapy. And they're describing someone horrible, right? With a severe glaring personality disorder. And I'm always the one raising my hand and saying, do not send them to me, please. and that's, I've had enough of them sent to me over many years. And it's like, no more. I mean, I am not going to beat my head against the brick wall trying to get a psychopath to not be a psychopath anymore. It's useless. But people like to hold on to hope. I have a girlfriend who for many years was going into prisons with some organization and trying to do these little groups and teach the prisoners to have empathy and compassion. And when she read my book on mass killers, and I go into personality, this kind of stuff we're talking about now, she said it shook her to her core because she was so invested in rescuing and believing that she was going to make an impact. And so I think some people get a sense of power and control out of feeling like I'm going to be the one to change these people. And it's been a gradual wake-up call for her over the years that, you know, as she said most recently, I think I'm just going to stick to rescuing dogs and get out of the prison thing.
It's a good tactic. I like that idea. Let's shift to the other side of the story here. The victims, the two girls who did everything right, and they still watch the system set this monster free. What kind of trauma occurs when survivors see the leniency given to their abuser like this?
Yeah, it's a message to them that they don't matter. And they're re-traumatized by the legal system. And this is not just a single one-time trauma, but it's something that they live with every day. It goes on and on and on. So yeah, shame, anxiety, depression, reliving the experience. People have sleep problems. They're hypervigilant. It affects their sense of themselves and how they can ever feel safe in the world. It's really awful for them.
So they're out there feeling that every day, looking behind their back when they walk into a store. I'm sure looking around, making sure, oh God, I hope I don't run into him. Eventually, they'll probably have to move. Because of that, just so they can try and have some sort of peace and sanity. And this is what they're feeling every single day. Mm-hmm. What do you think this piece of shit is feeling when he walks into that Walmart?
Absolute normal way of being for him. Yes. Yeah. And there's probably a bit of increased self-esteem for what he got away with. You know, he feels pretty darn good about himself.
I'm sure the judge and DA should be very proud of their decision to allow that to happen. That seems like how the system should work for rehabilitation. It is absolutely maddening. I mean, what kind of message does that then send to other people who are going to go through this? I'm not necessarily speaking of who he will very highly likely reoffend against, but just other people in the community, other teenage girls where this inevitably takes place because there's monsters out there like this. And them wanting to speak up and say something. This is just basically saying, Don't say shit, because you're gonna have to go through all of this. You're gonna have to go through court. You're gonna have to testify. You're gonna have to, you know, be believed. And for what? Why go through all of that shit? Why put yourself through that emotional hell and re-victimize yourself and have to tell your story to a bunch of strangers where at the end of the day, the grown-ups in the room are gonna act more immature than this doughboy?
Yeah, it silences them. It silences them. And there are already so many women and young girls victimized sexually, often by family members. And they may try to tell someone, they're not believed. And this has a silencing effect. So they're isolated with shame and trauma and the lingering effects. And how do they ever feel safe in the world? You know, there's that meme that's been going around in social media. If a woman was walking alone in the woods, and would she rather run into a man or a bear? And most women said they'd rather run into a bear than a man. And this is, I think, sometimes hard for men to understand how women move through the world with this sense of never really being safe. And cases like this just reinforce that.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking, and it's utterly insane and 1000% preventable, especially when you have the bear in the trap. Mm-hmm. And we're like, go ahead, bear, go on out. Nothing could possibly go wrong from here. I made an analogy the other day. It's like being in a zoo, and the zookeeper is, we're going to let the mountain lion out. It's a real cute kitty. Go ahead. Like, this is a bad idea. Do not let the mountain lion. It's going to be fine. Just let it out. And then we're just like, well, this is just how we do things here. It's nuts. Why is our culture prioritizing these young boys' potential over these women's pain? Mm-hmm. I mean, and we had a female judge here too.
Really? Okay. That's a piece I did not pick up on. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Even more shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It blows your mind. And then that's where I kind of try to feel like, is there some sort of identification going on here? Mm-hmm. Like what is going on? And it's impossible to know in anyone's mind exactly how they're processing it. But it seems like some sort of deep rooted scarring or something that is allowing these people's actions or lack thereof to take the forms that they are.
Yeah, really misguided. And I would guess, again, this kind of magical thinking that there's something that can happen in talk therapy that is transformative. But it's crazy. I have not seen a case like this to this degree where somebody with this kind of violence and was just given this kind of a sentence. I mean, not even to have to register as a sex offender going into the future. Crazy.
Because this isn't even just one of those where it's a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old, and technically it's statutory rape, and they're both consenting to. This is not that at all. Right. And this is not where dad wants to press charges because, you know, this is not that. One of the girls almost died. Mm-hmm. and this is where we sit on it. It's utterly, utterly insane. If you could, because I'm sure he's going to be locked in his parents' basement or living in his parents' basement for the foreseeable future. That would be my guess. If you could say something to the parents, to mom, to dad, about anything, about the mutant that's living in their basement that they've wrapped in bubble wrap and the monster they've made for the foreseeable future when he gets out, what would you be giving them in terms of recommendation on parenting advice for something like this?
Boy, those are the ones that you need to get into therapy. And I would have lots of questions for them. How do they explain this? What's the story they're telling themselves? And then I would ask lots of questions and poke holes in that story and try to get them to look at reality. And also to, you know, read over. I think it can be very good therapy when you're trying to break through denial for people to read over the victim's stories, because that's probably something that they've been ignoring. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sometimes enough to bust some denial if they have to sit and read aloud. what really happened to the victims here. And then there was, I was going to mention, you know, as we were talking, I flashed on a case in Oregon, where it was a local case, and it was a 14-year-old boy with his 12-year-old cousin. And again, it was touching. It was not aggression in any way. And of course, touching is wrong. It's molest. Mm-hmm. He got a 10-year prison sentence for that. 10 years.
And
yeah. And when you, you know, so you look at the differences in our country, depending on where you're at, is another strange thing. You know, if this had happened in Oregon, I guarantee it would have been different than this kind of sentence. So it's.
And isn't it interesting? The more God you got in your area, the lighter the sentences and the punishment is for absolutely deviant, evil behavior. Seems to kind of go against the way of God or any of that thinking. Mm-hmm. Call me crazy. I don't know. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, as always, thank you so much for coming on. Your books, The Mind of Mass Killers, available wherever books are sold, and your autobiography, Nightbird. This is another great read and really dives into where you come from and the expertise that you give, because it is lived. And
It is sadly lived. Don't make the mistakes I made in my youth, kids. Yeah.
It is lived, and the insight that you give is so priceless, and I think so much more weight on it than someone who's just studied this stuff. My God. Please do again check out wherever you get books. Until next time, for Siobhan and all of us here, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender, juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.